You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome back to the 750. You're listening, of course, as always, in partnership with BloggingTheBoys.com, SB Nation, and Vox Media. I am the O, RJ Ochoa. He is the 7-5, the one and only two-time Super Bowl champion, Tony Casillas. Tony, good day to you, sir.
Great day to you also, Big O.
I like that, Big O.
The Big O.
I mean, I know that you're a Texas guy. I drive to Dallas, obviously, every other week for the Cowboys games. Have you ever been to George's in Waco? You ever been there?
You know, I haven't. I have not.
It's a cool little, I wouldn't say hole in the wall, but it's like a really local place. It's called George's, and they have, I mean, I've only ever been there when making the drive to Dallas, so I haven't been able to do this, but they have these gigantic beers and margaritas that they call the Big O. It's like in a goblet, and they call it the Big O.
Hey, that's right in my wheelhouse.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Margaritas, beer. Hey, you and I are going to have to maybe visit there sometime.
Yeah, we'll meet at George's. You know, we'll record the 750. We'll do it all. It'll be big.
A road trip to Waco. Let's see. We'll think about that.
That's how every great story starts, with a road trip to Waco. I mean,
that's for sure.
Tony, it is the middle of week 6. The Dallas Cowboys are 2-3. They play the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday. We talked about their horrific loss to the Houston Texans earlier this week. And we're going to talk more about the pregame. You know, we jump on Instagram Live a lot, on the Blog and the Boys Instagram Live and your Instagram Live. So we'll get into the pregame on Sunday and later this week. But there's just been so much going on. This has been such a big week for the Cowboys. And I feel like that happens, and I know you can speak to this, although you guys didn't lose a lot, but that happens when you lose. When you play for the Cowboys and you lose, and specifically when you lose in debatable fashion the way they did, it makes for a long week.
There's a lot of debate. It's so funny. I was actually speaking at the Omni Hotel right next to the Star, and and part of my, I asked everyone, would you mind joining me a moment of prayer? And I was thinking, this is going to be, I'm going to kind of spin it a different way. So I'm up there and I'm like, hey, join me and bow your heads. And I'm like, dear Heavenly Father, football Father, would you please instill some capability for the Dallas Cowboys offense to get in the end zone? And would you please empower players to come out of the heavens, Troy Aikman, Michael Irvin, offensive line, and Emmitt Smith, and empower them with some ability to score points? And, you know, this week, as you just alluded to, it's becoming a lot of drama. You got the owner coming out and saying they really haven't had a number one receiver in the last, he said few years, but then I think maybe he said, went out, corrected himself, maybe said 3 years. And then you got players all of a sudden, this dissension and questioning. Because losing, as you just mentioned, comes along with being frustrated, mm-hmm. and a lot of things not happening good. It all comes down to negativity, and that's what they're experiencing right now with a 2-3 record.
Let's start. This is a big onion. You know, let's peel the layers back. Let's start with what Jerry said about the number one receiver, because I think when everybody heard that on 105.3 The Fan, everybody said several years. Jerry Dez was on this team. You know, this is the first year.
Several years. What? I mean, about some clarity in that?
It's like, you know, I started watching, I'm sure you've seen the commercials for that show Manifest, where they get off the plane and they're like, oh, dude, it's been 5 years. You've all been missing. That's what it feels like. Jerry, dude. I mean, come on, man. But, and of course, Dez clapped back on Twitter and he said that Jason Witten was the number one receiver in Dallas. I mean, you know that Jerry is a very calculated person. He doesn't say anything without thinking about it. I found that very, very, I don't even want to say fascinating, just very curious that he would say something like that, especially when Dez has been almost publicly begging to come back to the team.
As much as we, you know, as much as I love listening to Jerry, and we talked about this probably 3 weeks ago when, you know, they asked him something after the game, and, you know, it's Jerry Jones radio. Sometimes I think some things don't need to be said. And it's such a unique situation with this owner being accessible right after the game. It doesn't happen anywhere in the National Football League. And it just seemed, again, it's this lack of communication between him and the head coach. And it's always about undermining what, you know, the head coach said or someone else.
Right.
And I just, you know, when he makes these comments, it's almost like maybe he is calculated. He's sending a message to Dez, and then he's thinking about, well, he's contradicting himself.
Yeah.
Because he paid Dez Bryant. How much money did Dez Bryant make? $50 million guaranteed. And he wasn't a number one receiver. I mean, I don't think you go out and pay those kind of guys that type of money if they're not a number one guy. And I kind of understand where he's going, but I just, that right there was very, I was just really, I was lost of words to explain that comment.
Well, so Jerry comes out and doubts Garrett immediately in the aftermath. And then later in the week when he did appear on The Fan, he kind of walked that back, kind of said that he trusted Garrett after all and that he agreed with the decision. Steven, in his radio appearances, he said that he backed Garrett and supported the decision, etc. I just find that also interesting because if you and I owned the Cowboys, hypothetically, and we were sitting in the owner's box and we had just lost to the Texans, on our way down and the elevator down, we would say, okay, what's our message going to be? You know what I mean? Whatever it is, you know, Tony, what do you
think?
Have
some type of strategy.
Yeah, exactly. Even if we disagreed with one another, we would, you know, one of us would have to compromise and say, for the collective good of our business, you know, in this specific moment, we have to be on the same page. Because if we are saying different things, the two of us, we look like a firestorm, and that's not something that's good for anybody.
Or just don't say anything.
Yeah, I mean,
let it go.
You know, but this
but
you
that's
know,
not that, that will not ever happen.
That's true.
As we all know.
And you know, we could have done a whole show on just these comments, but everybody is saying stuff this week. This is a week of gossip. I mean, basically.
Oh, it's a national topic.
So I do think. A minute ago, I said if we owned the Cowboys. Now let's pretend we're receivers on the Cowboys. Now, I mean, you know, with our builds, I think we could do it. But yeah. You know,
about a 6-9 route or
right, you know. Exactly. I'd go over the middle. I'd do it once. You know what I mean? Like
you probably get a little separation.
That's what I'm saying. Right. You know, but if we were, Jerry's come out and talked about how he said, oh, well, we don't have a number one receiver. Okay, cool. Steven comes out and says we don't have a number one receiver. If we were receivers on the team, I have to imagine we'd be pissed off because we'd be saying, dude, everybody like our owner and our general manager and whatever you want to call Steven, the executive vice president, everybody's coming out and dogging on us, basically. Everybody is saying how we are not number one receivers. And while that very well may be true, because it is true, it would not feel good. You know what I mean? That would bother me if I was a receiver on the team. I mean, as somebody who's been there, maybe not necessarily something said about you, but do guys in the locker room in this instance, are they aware of that? And are they saying, man, what the heck? Like, we're on this team. How can they be saying this about us?
Well, it's, you know, I guess it's a question that the guys took it personally.
Right.
And, you know, here's what I thought about RJ is a number one receiver. It's a number one. Is it all about how much money you're being paid? Because as you look around the National Football League, the number one receiver, I guess when you look around the National Football League, you think about the elite receivers. And, you know, right away, I mean, you maybe think of three or four different guys. And
sure.
Then after that, you have to think about it. But, yeah, I think maybe it's kind of that notion where you're as a player, you're like, well, how about me? Mm-hmm. And then you start thinking, well, how much am I being paid? Because there's a big difference between the pay scale between a really
right.
formidable wide receiver and number one. And maybe in a way, maybe, you know, Jerry and Steven kind of interpret it that way. Well, you know, we're not paying them $15, $16 million, so they're not a number one. But, you know, when you backpedal and you think, well, you know, they talk about what receivers they had 4 or 5 years ago. And
right.
Then Dez comes to mind. But I started thinking, well, how about a number two? Who's our number two receiver? And who maybe who's our number three? Because right now it really doesn't matter number one, number two, or number three, because we really don't have one guy that they go to.
Right.
So it really doesn't matter. But well, to me, I think that's how I interpret it. I think they'd quantify it with dollar signs.
That makes sense. And I understand that. I still, though.
It still doesn't. It's like they're talking about as a defensive lineman, and we're talking, and he's making a comment like, well, I wish we had defensive linemen like, as an example,
Jerry,
on another team, you know, that's maybe not the good analogy, but you're always like, you want to be pumped up by your coach.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be pumped up by your owner. And I think maybe you kind of lose the confidence. You lose confidence in yourself because what someone else is saying, and they don't really think about what they're saying before they say it.
That's what I'm – that's my thought is if we were in that locker room, if we were in the receiver room, we would be saying, what do you – man, you know, to your point, why are you – say if you feel this way, okay, respect. We could talk about it, you know, man-to-man, mano-a-mano, face-to-face. You know, maybe I'm not holding up my end of the bargain. That's fair. But what are you doing saying this to the world? I mean, it feels like salt in a wound. I don't mean to equate the relationship this way, but it feels like a parent talking about a child, like, you know, after a Little League game, little Johnny, he's not, you know, he sucks at batting. You know what I mean?
Little Johnny, I wish you as good as the other kid on the team, or,
exactly.
You know, something like that. Because, you know, as kids, as parents, you really can't send that message.
Right, and that's, I feel like, again, not that an owner is a parent or anything, but I feel like
that's kind of the way you put it in the analogy.
Right, and I feel like if I was an owner, I would not say anything negative about my players to the public. I mean you got to have face-to-face conversations, like I'm saying, but I don't know that Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones talking or necessarily implying negative things about their receivers is going to make their receivers feel good.
Well, I always thought this, and I always feel like I have to go back when I play, but you'll have to allow me to do that because that's why I'm part of the 750. There's a way you can motivate people through the media.
Mm-hmm.
You can motivate people and send messages out there. You know, Jimmy was great at psychology. You would say something, and you kind of like, okay, well, I need to step my game up.
Right.
And when you mentioned, you know, Jerry being calculated, maybe that it resonates with some of these guys. I don't know, because there's got to be some type of fear. But I think, again, on the other side of that, the more and more this becomes, you know, this dissension, and, you know, they start blaming guys on different things, and then Jerry especially starts making these remarks, he's going to start losing the team. I mean,
sure.
You know, Jason Garrett, I think you kind of see the writing on the wall. The more and more Jerry talks and undermines what his decision-making and decisions he makes, the more and more he's going to lose that locker room. The more and more players is going to be unsettling, and it's going to be kind of a toxic environment.
That's what it feels like. It feels like
it's right on the cusp.
Right.
I mean, this week against Jacksonville, oh my gosh. Because it's going to be a tough game. If they lose and if they get hammered, you know, look out.
The whole thing feels like we've seen this movie before. It feels like your classic scary movie, and this is the part of the movie where the group, you know, the five or six friends, they're packing up the van, you know, to go to the lake house for the weekend. You know what I mean? And we all know, we've all bought our tickets and our popcorn, and we're all, you guys, you know, there's a murderer out there. Yeah. You know, that's going to happen. The axe is coming. That's what it feels like. It feels like, you know, like you said, the writing is on the wall. We've seen this. There are symptoms, and one of them is what Alan Hearn said this week. And I find it fascinating that Alan was the one to talk because, A, he's a receiver, and that's the position group being chastised the most by the ownership group in Jerry and Stephen Jones. And for all we know, when Jerry and Stephen and everybody sat Alan Hearns down during his recruitment in free agency, they said, Alan, you come in here, you're going to be our number one. You're going to be that guy. Because he was the big – I don't want to say big name, but he was the biggest name that they brought in.
Yeah, the big free agent
right.
In the offseason.
And so, you know, he's got five catches this season. So he might be thinking, yeah, that's just, these are my thoughts. I'm not putting anything out there just for anybody listening. Maybe Allen's thinking, you know what? They told me I was going to come in. I was going to be a big part of this game plan. Dez was released. They were going to rely on me, etc. Now, not only do I only have five catches, but now they're saying that we don't even have a number one receiver. And they told me that that's what I was going to be. They haven't given me the opportunities, etc. But Alan Hearns, so he comes out, and he's a very quiet person. I mean, and he comes out through ESPN's Jacinta Anderson and talks about Scott Linehan and the play call in Houston on Dak's second interception, and not just questions it, says it's the worst type of play call that you can make against that type of coverage. Those are big words.
And I think as a player, you have pride. You have your body of work, you know, speaks for itself. I mean, there's a certain, you know, an amount of pride that you have, and you have an ego.
Sure.
And it's like anything else. People keep saying all these negative things about you. And like, you know what? That's not the way things are going down.
Yeah, it's not my side of the story.
Yeah, you do not understand. Yeah, it's a one-sided story. You know, let's hear the other side of it. And I think after a while, Alan Hearns is like, look, you just don't understand. And I understand that. And I have no problem with him because it seems to me that they're going to have to defend Dak. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a quarterback. If it's him, I mean, if you look at his, you know, his passing percentage, completion, it's 61%. And you look at some of those plays, I mean, how many of those were drop balls or, you know, the offense or whatever. I mean, the play that Alan Hearns was talking about, yes, I think I think there's a lot of credibility to him saying that. Mm-hmm. Because, again, they want to be able to defend their side of the story and let everyone understand that, look, you guys are just bashing us. You know, you keep beating us down, and after a while, you know, if you keep just putting in all those negative deposits, then you know things that are negative are going to come out, and I think that's where he is. It's kind of the brink of everything.
You know, you're right. You've said it before that as I think as a team you can develop this sort of us against the world mentality. I know, in 1992 you guys were the number one defense in the NFL, and you guys got no respect from the rest of the league, you know. And so, you know, from my perspective at least, that's a rally for you guys. You know, nobody respects us. We're the number one defense of the league. We're going to go out. We're going to show it, et cetera. Obviously, you guys went out and, you know, I mean, you win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but you know what? We didn't have people saying how bad we were. I mean,
right.
We didn't have this dissension, and, you know, we knew how good we were. I mean, we went out and we balled and did those type of things. We knew the identity that the offense and was totally different then than now. We knew the offenses were going to go out there and score points, bail us out on drives, and it was a whole different landscape. Now it's, yeah. But I mean, to your point, yes, in a certain way, we really didn't care what people were saying about us because we knew that the offense was the glamorous.
Right.
That was the sexy woman, you know, mm-hmm. And we kind of fulfilled our role, and I mean, we had that big chip on our shoulder.
Sure, and I think maybe definitely part of the difference is the chip was on everybody. It was a shared chip with the team. Your enemy, so to speak, was the world. You know, it wasn't anybody in that building, and that's the difference here. Is that
also RJ is that we didn't really the evolution of Jerry Jones, the infancy had just started.
Right, that's fair.
And so it was totally different, but But when you win, everything is great.
Mm-hmm.
When you're winning, everybody's happy. Everyone, you can do no wrong. But mm-hmm. as soon as you start losing, as soon as you know adversity starts hitting the building, then you kind of find out who you really are and how much character you have.
What are the thoughts in a locker room with a situation like Alan Hearns? Because Jacinta Anderson, when she reported it on NFL Live, she was very, very clear that what Alan told her was on the record. So it's not like she's breaking any protocol. I mean, she firmly established with him, hey, this is on the record, right? He said, yeah, go ahead, run with it, whatever. So, I mean, if you're in that locker room, are you thinking, wow, Alan's talking. Alan, you know, Alan's airing out the dirty laundry, so to speak. I mean, obviously you're aware of it. I mean, do you think that? Do you think like, wow, you know, okay. I mean, does your perception change? I mean, these are questions I think that people are curious about because it's hard to know unless you've been there.
I think it's a great indicator of how other guys feel.
So you think he's like a spokesman to a degree?
To a certain extent, mm-hmm. because as we just mentioned, he's this quiet guy. You never hear from Alan Hearns. And I think, again, he got to a point where, look, you know, I need to set the record straight. And I don't think what he said was really like throwing anybody
sure,
under the
sure,
bus.
I
think it was pretty constructive and very eloquent the way, you know, he put it. And that's X's and O's.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now with social, with every electronic, everything out there, I think, and the fact that he, you know, he doubled down on it, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Yeah, I think
he came out and said, "Look, you know, this is the way it is," and I get it. I mean, I have no problem with that. But you know, what I caution this whole thing is that this may be an indication how all the other players feel. But then Allen Hurns is like, and then what Cole Beasley said something 2 weeks ago mm-hmm. about, you know, being open and all that. And, you know, if you can't continue to really develop some type of be creative and be able to change things and try to get guys involved, you know, if they run a certain route into coverage, I mean, these guys know exactly what they're doing. So there's nothing to do. So I think that's a frustration. And again, as I said, I think this is an indictment about how other players may feel.
I think if you're a Cowboys fan, the best case scenario here is that maybe all the receivers, maybe a group of guys were sitting together and they were just pissed off. You know, I mean, this sucks. Everybody's saying this. They've got these wrong ideas. And then, yeah, I mean, again, I'm not saying this is the case. I'm just making stuff up. But maybe that Allen said, you know what? I'm good friends with Jacina Anderson. You know what? Let's set the record straight. What should we say? I can say it. I'll be the guy. I'll step out. I think that's almost a leadership move if that's the case. And again, I mean, it could be that, or it could be just Allen stepping out on his own. But given his character and his resume so far throughout his career, I don't think that's the case.
No, I think he got to the point and said, screw it. I mean, we're tired again. I mean, you know, all this doubt and everything that's said, I mean, it's hard to have total, just
kumbaya.
Right. And not to have these rabbit ears and not notice what's being said about you.
Right.
Because it's being said all the time about, this team has no receivers. I mean, these guys are being paid just like everyone else in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. Now, it's what they do with this so-called, I would say, not negativity, but, you know, just calling, you know, different guys out. And however this resonates with, you know, Scott Linehan and this offense to try to change things. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it will be interesting to see how this all, you know, evolves.
I do, again, find it. I don't think it's a coincidence, is what I should say, that the receivers have been the target of criticism, that Jerry and Steven themselves have not criticized but haven't necessarily stopped criticism of wide receivers, and that Allen Hurns, who is a receiver, would be the one to come out. You know, we released a poll at SB Nation. We do this with Fan Pulse. We talk about this every week in terms of where Cowboys fans place the blame for the struggles this season. 56% said Jason Garrett's to blame, 23% said Jerry Jones, 21% said Dak Prescott. And before we get to Jason and Jerry, I'm curious about Dak because he has been such a target for criticism, obviously hasn't played well. I know there's a lot to this, that there's the footballness of it, but I mean, he's to a degree, I think he's your quarterback, he's your guy, he's in the locker room. Is generally, and I know there's no sort of 100% rule, but generally will players side, in this case with Dak, quickly or more quickly than they would side with, say, Scott Linehan or Jason Garrett because he's their guy? You know, I mean, is there anything to that if they're going to have somebody's back here, maybe it would be Dak versus Jason or Scott or whoever?
I think it's more the players. I think the players, they back each other. Mm-hmm. And you hear this a lot about a divided locker room. But I, you know, again, you have to, you know, whoever's going to be the scapegoat, whether it's Scott Linehan, whether it's Jason Garrett, I mean, they have got, you know, one thing about, you know, Dak is that, you know, this is a big year for him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's playing, you know, what for the minimum for a starting quarterback in the National Football League. So this is a big year for him as far as his future, as far as making is a starting quarterback. You got starting quarterbacks in the National Football League making $20 million.
Right.
And he's being being paid $600,000 and some change. So that's a big year for him. And, you know, I think if there's a point maybe he gets a little pressed about making decisions. I mean, it can't be all the scheme. And I think there's a lot of pressure goes with that. You know, this is third year in the National Football League. And that's kind of the curb in which you kind of see guys start to evolve, you know, mm-hmm. which direction they're going to go.
Yeah, it's a break year, certainly, yeah.
I mean, it can't, you know, the first year, we, again, I always say we got a little romance because of just everything, how it just kind of clicked. I mean, you had the greatest, you know, the best running back in National Football League as a rookie. Mm-hmm. And then it's been up and down. Last year, you didn't have him. And, you know, now it's just all, everything's predicated on running the football. Mm-hmm. And so he's behind that. And when all of a sudden they're not running the football like they did in the past, and he's having to make these plays, then it's on him because he's the efficient go-to guy, because he's got to be able to, you know, create opportunities, you know, hit on the balls, you know, whatever he needs to do. That, you know, then that becomes more centered around the quarterback.
I find it so ironic that the buzzword of the offseason was Dak friendly. That was a word that came to us from, you know, the ownership, from the front office, that they were going to make this team Dak friendly. That was part of obviously releasing Dez. You know, Witten retiring wasn't their decision, but every piece they added offensively was with the intention of making the team Dak friendly. And it makes me wonder, what if you guys were trying to be mean? I mean, because if this is you guys trying to help him more than ever, I mean, they surrounded him with, and I mean this with no disrespect, with a bunch of nobodies. I mean, that's what it looks like right now. I mean, they literally threw Dak into the deep end and said, oh, dude, this is the best case scenario for you to swim. Go for it, man. Just do it. Just do it. Just be Dak. And it's I don't want to say it's unfair to him, because Dak's a quarterback in the National Football League. As you said, he's a third-year player. I mean, he has responsibilities that he has to live up to. It's just, you know, if you had to build one thing, this is a really questionable thing to build.
Well, I look at the team they're playing this week with Jacksonville, and Blake Bortles, I mean, he threw up, you know, almost 400 yards of 400 yards of passing last week against the Chiefs, and was thrown for over 300 yards. And everyone looks at Blake Bortles and they say, oh, he's a game manager. Mm-hmm. Well, he's putting up some numbers. I mean, he's got 1,500 yards of already, you know, throwing the football. And you're like, ask yourself, well, you know, if he's a game manager, because everyone always, all they talk about is Jacksonville's defense. Then you look at Dak in his third year in the National Football League. You know, Dak friendly, what is that? Is that having a good tight end? Is that having maybe one receiver that can catch the ball? Is it play action? I mean, there's so many things that go into it, that you got A, B, C, D, and E, and F, or whatever. So which one is it? Because right now, it really hasn't been, you know, if you look at Dak Friendly should, again, you have to hit those throws. You got to make those plays. You have to, you know, utilize what his strengths are. And if you look at it that way, him being a mobile quarterback and getting in play action, it really doesn't fit that this year.
We talk a lot about television shows. Have you ever seen, it's an older show, How I Met Your Mother? It was a sitcom on CBS for like 10 years. Did you ever watch that show? Mm-hmm. There was an episode where one of the characters, his name was Marshall, he had had a burger at one point. I mean, they lived in New York, so he had a burger, and, you know, and it was kind of just a running joke that he had never been able, the one time he went and had this burger, he was lost. And so he just stopped and had a burger at this place, and it was the best burger he'd ever eaten in his life. And so ever since then, he kept trying to find that place, but because he found it because he was lost, he could never find it again. And so he would stop at one place, I think this is it, and he would eat it. Nope, this burger, this isn't it. And you know, he would try it, and at the episode ultimately ends with him having the burger. But part of the journey is that they say, dude, maybe, you know, maybe you can't recreate that experience. You know, maybe that burger was just that great that day. You know, it's maybe not going to be that good every single time. And I feel like the Cowboys are trying to find that burger. You know what I mean? In 2016 was that burger. They're like, oh, we can find it. You know, we can find it. We just got to get Dak friendly. We got to run more play action. We got to, you know, whatever. And they just keep trying and trying and trying to find that burger. But you are just never going to catch that lightning back. They're trying to rebottle the lightning. It's not just that they're trying to catch it. They're trying to rebottle it, which is impossible.
Well, the ingredients, it's like anywhere, the time and place where you're at. I mean, your taste buds, I mean, everything. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, that's the best Mexican food I ever had. And you go back and maybe it's quite not that good, because I guess your expectations are always it's going to be that good.
Yeah.
And sometimes it'll be good, but not as good as the first time you went there.
Sometimes you go there at 2 a.m., you know, and you're starving. And,
oh,
and you
absolutely. Everything tastes better at 2 a.m.
Exactly.
But then when you go at 9 p.m., oh, gosh, why does it? Why is it one? Am I getting sick off this?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, but that's kind of what it feels like the Cowboys are trying to do. You know, on Wednesday, Jason Garrett was asked about Dak Prescott's accuracy because your boy Troy Aikman had some comments about that this week. He told a story. He made sure to talk about how Troy called him Red Ball. But you know, he talked about Dak and he was asked about his accuracy, and he said, when everything's good, he could be a very good passer. And it's like, well, dude, duh. I mean, when everything's great, of course he can play great. But that to me, I'm not saying he said this, that was emblematic of who they are. They have a plan. They put it together Monday through Saturday. And if the plan works, if everything goes according to the plan, they'll win. They'll be a good team. And sometimes that happens. But if it gets 1 degree off course, they're broken. You know, they have no ability to steer it back home. It's like they launch a rocket, you know what I mean? And they can't pilot it. They just have to hope that it worked.
Well, and I agree with you because it seems like it's so predictable. Do you watch this team and you're like, well, okay, if they get a lead, they got a good chance of winning. And if they lose that, then all of a sudden their offenses, they're going to do different things. And you're like, okay, well, it's almost predictable where they get in the red zone and they can't score. And then, you know, the first half will be pretty good, and they come out and, you know, they're flat on offense. And so then you think, okay, well, we've seen this show before. Mm-hmm. And you really, they can't, the adjustment that you have to make during the course of a game, because that's all we ever talked about, is sudden change. Your sudden change, you just, you know, you just roll with it. You know, we'll do something different. We'll try this. We'll, you know, if they're rushing, we'll slow them down. We'll try to, you know, combat that or whatever we need to do. And, you know, for me, it just seems to me that they're, you know, they get the game plan on Wednesday. We're going to do this and that. But, I mean, you have tendencies. You have things, and you work on things that change, that, you know, you counter whatever the team is,
right,
is stopping. And there seems to me at times there's no counterpunch.
Well, it seems to me like, and that's why I've used the word arrogance before, like they believe, okay, you know what, they stopped it on the last series, but we're going to beat them this time. You know, this time it's going to work, and then it doesn't. You know, I mean, to your point, you have to adjust, you have to adapt, you have to counter. You have to, it's a moving game. It's, you know, you can't come into it with a script. You know what I mean? You got to be riding it while it's going on, and it doesn't feel like they're capable of doing that. Before we dive into that particular side of things, you know, very quickly, I guess, along the defensive line, David Irving is in the news again. Hasn't played with the team yet since returning from suspension. Big Dallas Morning News article dropped on Wednesday night about his road back and the struggles he's dealing with his ex-girlfriend, the mother of his child, and just all sorts of things. In a situation like this, I feel like this goes without saying, but if you're his teammate, are you telling him, you know what, dude, you got things going on that are way bigger than football? Take care of that. You know, this will be waiting for you when you're back.
I don't know. I kind of use my football family as a way to be able to deal with some things. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is just so far out there that he can't compartmentalize, you know, work and then going home and having to deal with family life. Because I'm not trying to be insensitive to Dave, you know, towards David Irving. But I think we all have to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And you know, his problems are huge. I mean, just I'm just keeping it real with what, you know, he's got going on. I mean, it's not something that he can go to work and like, okay, I have to work. You know, I have to support my family. Mm-hmm. And then he goes and deals with all the stuff off the field. I mean, we all have to deal with that. Now, do I understand that? Am I sensitive to that? Yes, as a teammate. But there comes to a point where you're like, David, you know, you got to decide on what you want to do. Yeah. Do you want to be a professional football player, or do you want to just, you know, have to deal with these issues? Because that part of you is getting into what has made you, you know, be able to have the opportunity to play professional sports. And, you know, you've spent so much time, and I think some of this stuff is self-induced. I mean, self-inflicted, I'm not trying to be insensitive to it. I understand that, but I always thought that, you know, your problems are, you know, when you have problems at work and you have problems at home, and so you try to separate that. Mm-hmm. But I think what he's done, through social media, whatever. I mean, I don't know. It's really just crazy what has happened. I think that, you know, he's made this a lot bigger than it should be.
It's, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I understand everything. I think it's a situation where there's no perfect answer. And I think it's a situation where maybe the answer for every person is a little different. I don't think there's like a handbook that you can go to, but I agree that it's probably very frustrating if you're his teammate, because you're thinking, do we understand, you know, we want the best for you, but this is happening also. And you know, Jason Garrett mentioned that there does come a point in the week where they say, you know what, he hasn't practiced, he hasn't whatever, we have to, you know, we have to not have him this week on the field because of, you know, obviously those implications. It's just, I think the most appropriate word is it's unfortunate. I mean, this is just an unfortunate storm that has circled around his life that has merged both personal and professional occupations. And I think, you know, again, it goes without saying we wish the best for him. We hope everything works out. But it is another thing that is just probably very frustrating to deal with if you're connected to the team.
Well, we all know when he's on the field, I mean, he's disruptive. I mean, he's got this freakish talent. But – you know, they just had to deal with this with, you know, Randy Gregory and the issues he has off the field. I think as a teammate, yes, you support whoever's there. I mean, it's a brotherhood.
Right.
But after, you know, there's a point where, as you just mentioned earlier, there's a time when you think, well, your life and everything else you have is bigger than what you're doing now because it is so public. Mm-hmm. And that's a bad part about it also, with everything, the exposure, the social media, everything. And you're out there posting things about it, you're not really helping your situation. And we know that the Instagram and things that, you know, your people, I mean, they gravitate to that. They love that type of controversial and just kind of reading into it and filling in the blanks. And again, you know, last week I thought, you know, on Saturday when we went on Instagram and I was, you know, they scratched him on Friday or something, made him inactive because all this came up again. And I understand you got to practice and get your body ready, but they can spot play him. Mm-hmm. It's going to be one of these. It's a lot of drama. It's a lot of drama for what?
Yeah.
And again, I'm not trying to be. I understand totally. You have issues off the field.
Yeah, but you
got to be able to work through and sift through those.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I can tell you about, you know, things that I've had that I had to deal with. But again, when I went back to my football family as a way of dealing with it, and the more I was there, the more I felt safer, I felt stronger, and everything else that goes along with having that support system around you.
It is, obviously it's unfortunate. I know he's dealing with situations involving custody of his daughter, so.
You know, I know that's got to be very difficult.
It's I think, you know, we obviously wish him the best, wish him a lot of peace as much as he could find in all this. And I know that Cowboys fans want to see him on the field soon. But I have to imagine it's very difficult for Jason Garrett to manage because, I mean, especially amidst everything he's got going on now, I mean, he's juggling 16 things and you throw another one in there, you know, and it's another thing for him to juggle, another decision for him to have to make, he has to reach a point of no return, like he kind of talked about in the week. I mean, I'm making this up, but if it's Friday and he hasn't practiced all week, okay, you know what? We said if he didn't practice by Friday, he's not playing, whatever. So what is the point of no return with him as a Cowboy in general? You know, if he doesn't do this, I mean, whatever. I mean, you made a roster move to put him on your 53-man roster. But, you know, I know that Jerry Jones is probably doing what he can for him, things like that. But it was a great, great story from the Dallas Morning News. If you get a chance, go check it out. So, you know, again, this was just a week where – all sorts of talk happened. I mean, Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, Alan Hearns. Right before we started taping today, 750, Albert Breer from the MMQB put out an article, and he cited an anonymous player on the Cowboys. You know, shocker, Tony. Nobody wanted to go on the record here. and Albert asked the Cowboy if Scott Linehan is losing the room. You and I, so far today, we spent a lot of time talking about Garrett and Jerry. But he asked the player if Scott Linehan has lost the room, and the player said not yet, but he better tighten up. I would imagine, I would guess, if I had to bet something, I would assume that Scott's probably lost the room. The guys probably roll their eyes when Scott talks a little bit now. What are your thoughts here? I mean, because if somebody's losing the room, it feels like Scott's first.
Well, I just, as a defensive player, and I know that you make these calls and you're out of sync and you're making, you know, calls that has nothing to do with what they're running at you. And you know, it's all about, you know, the confidence in the guy, the play caller. And when your offense gets so stagnated over 5 games, I mean, there's a frustration that starts to build because, you know, again, everyone, not just inside the building, but outside, everyone's just like piling on and talking about Scott Linehan, and it's getting so vanilla and so plain, and they have to have a young mind. They got to have someone really just understand that, look, you know, this is the way I run things. But it's like everything changes. You know, there's always, you know, when Chip Kelly brought his, that fast offense from Oregon, I mean, wow, this is hard to stop. You know, it's something different.
Right.
And, you know, you're not asking Scott Linehan to go against what he's done in all his offensive coordinator life, but at least mix it up and be able to get these guys that played in these spread offenses that kind of understand the nuances of that and make the game quicker.
Yeah.
And I think for him, I think for them, they just don't see that.
Yeah, if he is vanilla, nobody's saying be Rocky Road. Nobody's saying, you know, don't go, you don't have to turn yourself into something different. Add some sprinkles. Add some chocolate
fudge.
Don't
have to be all Mr. Extravagant and you know, buy the fancy car and, you know, do things that you're not used to. You know, just kind of like meet me halfway.
So, I did some research this week. It's been well documented. The NFL has scored more points than ever through 5 weeks. 3,739 points. That's the most the league has ever scored through 5 weeks. The Dallas Cowboys have 83 of those. That is, and we're talking in a five-game stretch, the first 5 games of the season, that is the
seventh. Yeah, I read your article. Yeah. It's a great article, by the way.
Appreciate it. That is the seventh fewest in Dallas Cowboys. And we're not talking about a team with a young history. We're talking about the Dallas Cowboys, the almost 60 years. That is the seventh fewest through the first 5 games. So, you know, what's the phrase, a rising tide lifts all boats? The rising tide is the rules. The rules are changing. You know, quarterbacks are being protected. Things are working in favor of passing and scoring, and that rising tide is lifting all the boats. The other offenses are scoring more, as evidenced by, you know, the league high in points. Not only are the Cowboys not rising, they are actually sinking. I mean, it is actually difficult to do this. It's difficult to go this far against the grain. It's like, you know, those, what do they call them? Idiot bumps on the side of the highway, you know, when you veer off. It's like trying, you know, you can't drive on that easily. You know what I mean? There's got to be some control and some decision making.
Right. You can't drive on the shoulder.
Right, exactly. It's almost intentional. You know what I mean? It's so hard to do it on accident that it would have to be intentional.
Stay on track, fella.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, this whole, where we're at right now with this team and the offense is that, you know, you have to, again, you know, the NFL is all about fads. It's all about, you know, what is working. I mean, what's trending? You know, we see the, you know, different offenses. And I read that article and I'm thinking 83 points in 5 games. I mean, you don't know how bad that is.
Seven touchdowns.
And there's teams in the National Football League that score that in one game. And I know. And you got the same players. I mean, you know, some players are better than others.
Right.
And I use the old cliche. I mean, everyone's getting paid just like everyone else, but maybe ours aren't getting their checks every week. I don't know because, and you know, I hate to like really – I hate to put all the blame on the play calling. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a culmination of things.
Sure.
When you watch their offense, you watch it on tape, you watch, you know, what they're doing, it's so predictable. There's so many things that you know, you got to be able to change it up. And the inability to not do that is just it's amazing.
I think – I agree with you. I think it's a little bit of this, it's a little bit of that, whatever. But to me, it's one of two things in majority. There are two sort of options that serve as the majority of the problem. One, is that the offensive scheme the Cowboys employ, the Eric Coryell offense with Linehan and Garrett, whatever, is so outdated, is so archaic, is so old, and has been so improved upon by the rest of the offenses in the NFL and by the opposing defenses that it is just, you know, failing to that large of a degree. That's one option. The other option is that the Cowboys have literally assembled one of the worst offensive casts that we have ever seen in the longstanding history of this team. And I just feel like the former is more likely than the latter because, as you said, we've seen them do it, you know, and we've also seen this scheme work. But it seems like, to me, it's more of the scheme and the offense, and that's why I go back to arrogance because, dude, what you are doing is so literally on the opposite end of the spectrum from the rest of the NFL. I mean, at what point does the alarm go off to where you say, oh, that thing that's working for literally everybody else, maybe I should try that. You know what I mean? It's like if right now the Cowboys are still trying to start a fire with sticks when everybody else has got gas. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah, you're out on a survivor and you're trying to, you know, start a fire. I look at this inability to make big plays, and there is no threat of that. And, you know, every time you game plan every week, I mean, if you're a defense, especially if you're Jacksonville, you're just licking your chops because, you know, you look at the passing category, and Cowboys are, what, 29th in the National Football League? I mean, it's just – or 30th. I mean, I'm looking at the stats, and it's just – it's sad. And, you know, your biggest threat is running the ball.
They're fourth in rushing. Yet in total points, they're 30th. And so –
So what does that tell you? That tells you, yes, if you run the football, you got a pretty good chance. No, you don't.
It's amazing
because you got to be able to throw the ball downfield at certain points of the game.
It really is amazing. It's like the Cowboys are running a slightly better version of the Wildcat, except they're not even, you know, running the Wildcat. You know what I mean? It's that successful, or that lack of successful, I should say. Again, I think it's difficult. It's actually very impressive that they're bad in this particular way, because it would be hard to achieve if you were trying to do. You know how, like, sometimes, you know, you throw something and it hits the target on the first try. You hit a golf shot and it just does something. You go, man, I could try that 100 times and I would never do that again.
Exactly.
You know, it's like that. It's
same thing.
It's just you would never be able to do this if you tried. It's that impressively bad.
Yeah, the thing that really bothers me is that, or that I really love as a player, first of all, would be playing the Cowboys because they are such a one-dimensional team, and you know you have a good secondary. I mean, you can tee off on them, because they're not able to, you know, convert, and you know, any threat down the field and make big plays through the passing game. And again, It's not going to change. You can't all of a sudden decide, oh, in the middle of the season, we're going to change this, blow everything up, and all of a sudden we're going to change our whole offense.
Right.
It doesn't happen that way. And that's what goes back to, like, well, what are you going to do to change it up that much? You know what? Give me 8 or 9 scripted plays. Let me test some bootlegs, a reverse. Let me, you know, throw the ball downfield. You know, give me some different dimensions of offense.
Yeah.
That they haven't seen or haven't game planned.
I just think, I mean, just throw stuff against the wall. Go down swinging. You know what I mean? Go down swinging. If you're going to go down in flames. You know what I mean? Don't just sit there. And that's kind of what they're doing. Like we said, we'll get into the kind of the pregame, a little bit more details about the game on Instagram Live later this week. But before we get out of here, Tony, not really a prediction, but just sort of your thoughts on how this game's going to go. I'll go first. And I'll say, I think this is a bad game. You know, the Cowboys have been kind of in every game. I think this is a game that gets away from them earlier than usual. I think maybe the middle of the third quarter, they're down, you know, let's call it 3 scores. And I think you can feel the ugly, like a fog just, you know, within AT&T Stadium. I also think, and let's watch out for this is an afternoon game at AT&T Stadium, so watch out for the sun. The sun will be glaring.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, yeah. But I think this is a straw breaking the camel's back sort of game, I think, unfortunately for the Cowboys.
Well, I don't think the Cowboys, when they had the sun in their face, and I got to worry about it affecting the passing game, because I think that's not going to happen on Sunday. I hate to say that. You know, when you look at Jacksonville, they got some key players that are banged up on offense. They signed Jamal Charles. They brought him in. C.J. Yeldon is going to be their featured running back. They lost an offensive lineman. So there's some, I guess, positive things that the Cowboys could hopefully hope for on offense. Problem is, as I mentioned, Blake Bortles is he's not just a game manager. He puts up some numbers. But he also turns the ball over. He's got 7 interceptions this year. And they're -7 in the takeaway ratio. So when you look at that, but I just don't see the ability for the Cowboys offense to move against this defense. That's going to be the narrative. And I don't feel good about this game. I'm like you. It could get away really, really early. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they can be able to run the football against them. And surely, you got Jalen Ramsey. I hate to say this because he talks so much smack.
Oh, he's going
to
dominate.
One of the best defensive backs in the National Football League. So they're not even going to have to worry about that side of the field. I just don't feel good about this game. Again, I think it's really going to implode if they get really beat really bad. We're talking double digits.
I write bold predictions for bloggingtheboys.com. They usually go out about Saturday. And I'll give you a spoiler, Tony, and anybody that's listening. One of my bold predictions, the Cowboys will have no interceptions as a defense. I don't think they'll get one. I know that you said Blake Bortles, has a propensity to throw interceptions, but every time the Cowboys walk into a game with an apparent advantage, they walked into Seattle, their offensive line was terrible, Cowboys couldn't pull off a sack. They walked into Houston, offensive line was terrible, they couldn't get after Deshaun Watson with regularity in the form of sacks. This, you look at this and you would say, oh, awesome, we got this awesome defense, got this pass rush going to get home, Blake Bortles loves to throw interceptions, we're going to get a bunch of those things. I don't think we're going to get any. That's just their thing, what you hold up on a silver platter. Now we're good. We'll figure out.
You can't really count on that category to hold up.
They find a way to avoid the silver platter.
The problem is on the defense. Their defense has been playing so well, but they've been giving up a lot of big plays. Whenever when they played Houston, they were keeping them out of the red zone. But when they had to stop a drive. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to execute that. Mm-hmm. And I know you got to give them credit, but there comes a time you're like, look, I got to put my foot on their throat and say, look, we're going to bear down. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go against your bold prediction and say they do get a takeaway in this game.
Okay, well, you called
Blake Bortles will throw a pick in this game.
So you believe in Blake. I like it.
I'm going to play the percentages in this game.
That's fair. That's a good call. Briefly, before we get out of here, also something that Albert Breer mentioned that I know will make you happy, potentially, if it comes to pass. Happy in one way. If the Cowboys move on from Jason Garrett, there are a lot of names that people are considering. People throwing out Sean Payton, that's such a pipe dream. People throwing out John DeFilippo, the Vikings offensive coordinator, Matt LaFleur, the Titans offensive coordinator. But a name that a lot of people have connected to the Cowboys, partly out of proximity, partly out of moving towards college offenses, spread offenses, etc., has been your boy, Lincoln Riley. How would that make you feel if it comes to pass? Again, I know you'd be bummed for Jason, but
oh no, I mean it's all about production. It's all about being able to get things done and win in the National Football League. It's funny because every time when there was a problem in Bob Stoops' height of his career, mm-hmm. he was like the go to. Okay, speculation. Bob Stoops, come to Dallas and be right. the new head coach. I mean, we heard that all the time. One thing I like about Lincoln Riley is that I like his innovative approach to an offensive-minded game. Mm-hmm. And I like what he has done at Oklahoma. I think I think you kind of fight against that whole evolution of bringing that type of philosophy to the National Football League. I mean, you can to a certain extent. But I like his play calling. I mean, that's kind of his knack, and that's his DNA. And I liked the possibility of him being – being able to move on in the NFL and have success. I mean, I wouldn't have the problem with that because I think everyone's trying to look for that new Sean McVay, the young guy.
Totally.
And if you look at a guy that's if you're an offensive player and a wide receiver, I mean, why wouldn't you want to run in that type of offense? I mean, there's always someone open and there's always, you know, a quarterback. I mean, the ball's always coming out. I mean, look at Andy Reid. And that's a great example of Andy Reid. Look at Andy Reid. How long has he been in the National Football League?
Forever.
And look at what he's doing with that team. He's taking all those toys that he has and all those talents and catering it to the, you know, to their strengths. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's always been that kind of innovative as far as an offense. But look what he's doing. I mean, he's been a guy that's been in the National Football League for a long time.
And he's adapting.
Yep. And adapting to, you know, being vogue. So yeah. I like that. Lincoln Riley. I mean, they would have a defense on this team.
They would. I mean, and I know this is not the best
Hopefully.
Week. Not the best week to talk about Lincoln Riley, obviously. But if he could bring an offense that could score at will, like Oklahoma was able to narrow that gap last Saturday against Texas. I mean, that's all. You got to have that. If you want to hang in today's NFL, you got to have that. I think it'd be impressive after 2 years of coaching Oklahoma to make the jump, not just to the NFL, but to the Dallas Cowboys. But it's I think you can also – people want to fall in love with it because it's a big name. It's a juicy steak. You know what I mean? It's a juicy steak of an idea. Oh, Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma, he coached up Baker Mayfield, whatever. You know, come in, fix Dak Prescott, et cetera. It would be a lot of fun, though. I do agree.
Well, here's the thing, too, is that Jerry Jones is not going to be your typical situation. We say this – yeah, we want to bring – I think the – you know, he brought Bill Parcells in, and Bill Parcells did it his way, but I don't think Jerry – I thought he fought against that. And but, yeah, I think that you have to have someone that has this big mind when it comes to trying to exploit everything that you have available. Mm-hmm. And you're either born that way or you're not.
That's a good line. I like it. Tony, this was a great episode. Lots of ground covered, lots of people talking for us to talk about. I enjoyed it. I hope you did as well. And people can catch us on Instagram Live later this week.
Yes, sir, Big O. As always, enjoy this Thursday with my man.
That's right. I'm the Big O. He is 7-5. This was the 7-5-0. You have a fantastic rest of your day, and we'll catch you next week.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seemed smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast-closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.